Fred at School Show. Fred at School Show.
Fred Film Radio, this is Niccolò Comotti for the third UK national show for Fred at School. Yes, we already arrived at the third pit stop, let's call it that, to use some motor terms. And the third show is based on Eat, Sleep, Die, the 2012 film by Gabriella Pichler. Very briefly, the film deals with some of the issues and the themes that the students already witnessed and lived through the other two previous films for Fred at School, so Illegal and Plato's Academy. In fact, Eat, Sleep, Die is almost a sort of a mix between the two. We find here the character of Rasha, which is this Swedish girl, daughter of some immigrants from Montenegro, struggling, you know, in her daily life after recently losing her job in a factory. And so we have the concept of, like, identity, which is very dear for, of course, the Lux Prize shortlists, and all the factors that actually can deteriorate that security that comes with precisely knowing where one is from. And these factors can be, as in Rasha's case, the loss of her job, the security that she had to sustain her father that is unable to work, and all the difficulties that come with unemployment also lead Rasha to doubting who she really is, a subtle and yet constant violence that Rasha suffers is just the prejudice that is within her surname, the indisposition of many employers to actually hire her just because she has a Montenegrin sounding surname. Anyway, before I talk too long, let me just let the professionals talk and introduce the film. So let's hear the beautifully extensive and detailed clip for Eat, Sleep, Die.
Fred at School. Eat, Sleep, Die. Originally, Etat Sauvageur is the first feature film directed in 2012 by Gabriella Pichler, a Swedish director born in 1980 to Bosnian and Austrian parents. The film is a low-budget production, shot entirely with non-professional actors and in places in the real life of the director, including her home. The film had a sensational reception from the critics and the Swedish public. On the occasion of the Guldbaggen 2012, the Swedish National Film Awards, the film won four of the most important categories: Best Film, Best Director, Best Leading Actress, and Best Original Screenplay. Due to the merit of its content and the issue dealt with, the film was even shown at a special session of the Swedish Parliament. In contention for Critics Week at the 2012 Venice Film Festival, it won the Audience Award. Sweden chose it as a candidate for the Oscars in the Best Foreign Film category, although it did not reach the top five shortlist. Gabriella Pichler is very familiar with the settings and the life stories described in her film. After a childhood and adolescence spent in a suburb of Stockholm, in 2003 she decided to leave her full-time job in a biscuit factory and enrolled at the film school in Gothenburg. There, she made various short films. The most important was the one with which she graduated in 2008, Skrapsa, Scratches, the story of teenagers who venture into a derelict industrial area, perhaps to live or just to pass the time, always in search of love, but at the same time without wanting to show their emotions too much, out of fear of being vulnerable. In 2009, the film won the Guldbaggen for the short film category, and in 2010, the Watch Audience Award at the Uppsala International Short Film Festival, and was sent to various international festivals. Presenting her film, Pichler explained what her creative intentions were. To make a film about a part of society I have always loved, but to which sometimes I am ashamed to belong. Sweden does not have an easy relationship with its image when dealing with the issue of immigration and political asylum. I want to be part of a process of redefining the national Swedish identity. the story of the leading character has very much to do with her identity and the way in which people see her. But it also shows the experience of so many young people in this period of economic crisis in Europe, where unemployment is very high and the internal contradictions of society are growing. Equally important is the fact that I also wanted to tackle a personal issue and show a type of relationship between father and daughter that I never saw on the screen when I was a girl. Due to her style of directing, many critics have compared Pichler to the Dardenne brothers, something that makes the Swedish director very proud, since she considers them to be her inspiration. Among the other directors who have captivated and influenced her, the most are Claire Denis, Wong Kar-wai, and Milos Forman.
So there you go. I wasn't that wrong when I did my little presentation. In fact, I kind of agreed. I mean, the very, very professional clip agreed with me, at least part of it. But now I've got also another really important person to talk to. Really important and very actually relevant regarding It's Leap Day, because he was one of the ones that presented the film for the International Critics Week in Venice in 2012. And this person is Eddie Pertozzi. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, Eddie, let's rewind our lives 3 years or so ago. And that was sort of, let's say, May 2012. You were watching hundreds of films. What made you stop and actually watch It Sleep Die and bring it to the 7 shortlisted films?
Well, when we first saw the film, we were all struck by the energy and the power of this film. You know, this is a film directed by a female director, is a, let's say, female-driven narrative, because the main protagonist is a woman, but it somehow overturned what we might call the stereotype about female filmmaking. I think most of us expect kind of poetic, delicate stories. While in this case, we had a hard, energetic, powerful depiction of social inequalities, unemployment, and identity, of course, in Northern Europe, with this extraordinary actress in the leading role. And we were both struck by the cinematic qualities of the film, so this powerful use of the handheld camera, for example, and of course the themes, the contents of the film, so as I said before, unemployment, social inequalities, which we thought were very themes very relevant to the current situation in Europe.
So I'm actually very interested in what you just said, because you said exactly that I had to, you know, films that probably you choose for the International Critics Week have to be relevant to the time where they, you know, when they were then living. So, for example, in 2012, we were still Europe per se struggling with inequality, unemployment, and economic crisis. In a certain kind of, in a certain way, we're still struggling like that. Before that, you also said the sort of the new and fresh way to depict a sort of a feminine look into cinema. So, as a representative for the International Critics Week, you always try to find films that they have these two traits in themselves. So, both a universal kind of depiction of films, as well as relevant and topic-based drives into the film itself.
Well, first of all, we look for new, fresh voices in, in world filmmaking, because our section exclusively present debut films, first-time directors' films. So, what we look for in a new director is some kind of freshness. We want to see something that I wouldn't say we've never seen before, but we want to see the potential of a new talent that can blossom in the future. And of course, thematic relevance is important, but not fundamental. You know, we have very different kind of films that we present. They can be very, let's say, abstract, universal films connected to some kind of the abstract emotional world, and then we have films like It's Lip Die that are relevant to a specific socioeconomic condition. What's important for us is that either on an emotional level or to a, let's say, factual, or both to an emotional level and a factual one, we have to relate, find a relation with the images on screen. We don't have to leave the screen indifferent.
Of course, yeah. And to conclude, one last question, which is probably more a curiosity. 3 years have passed from 2012, now we're like mid-2015. What stayed with you when you actually think right now, you know, you reminisce about this film, Eat, Sleep, Die? And also, what kind of effect do you feel when now you know, one of your shortlists back in 2012 now is used to actually raise awareness in young European audiences with Fred at School project all around 8 different countries?
Well, I'm really happy because, I mean, I still remember the emotion and the excitement that I first felt when I first saw the film. I remember the ending. I was totally overwhelmed. And what remains with me now, when I think about the film, is the powerful performance of the leading actress, yeah, and the energetic handheld camera works of the director. And I'm really looking forward to seeing her next film. So I'm really happy that now students all over Europe can see and discuss this film, because I think it's very important both for their, let's say, aesthetic appreciation of the cinematic art, but also because in this way they have the chance to discuss themes that are very contemporary, irrelevant to their own, to their lives as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Eddie, for being with us. That was great to have you here. And we're going to just stop by for a second and come back here with Fred at School, always on Fred Film Radio.
Fred at School Show.
So Fred at School here is always for Fred Film Radio. And today I'm joined, of course, by Nick Walker, UK's coordinator for Fred at School. Nick, welcome.
Hello there.
So let's just take some time for this slot and think a bit about the sort of journey that we had so far. We already screened 2 films, and there's also the third, which is Eat, Sleep, Die. We, of course, really, really interested in film literacy and how to provide and promote awareness in film literacy. What do you think so far has been the journey? Like, you predicted the way that it developed so far, or you kind of saw different things? What are your thoughts about it?
Yeah, well, I think the project, first of all, is absolutely fascinating for 2 reasons. One is, the first of all, is because it fits in very, very nicely with UK schools' commitment to having more experiences, both for the teachers and for the young people, but also people working in the industry, as in cinema officers and education, yeah, generally working in cinema literacy, because they want to get more people, young people, to be experiencing European cinema. Mm-hmm. And within general education system here, so looking at the curriculum, that also helps audience development, but it's about enriching people's lives. So it fits in very nicely with that. The second thing, which has been, and I thought that would be how this looks. It was pretty much a formula of what people are already doing. Mm-hmm. The added incentive, I think, for schools and for everybody involved with this is the radio element. Sure. Because it obviously gives people an opportunity to feed back in a way that they're not particularly used to, which can be challenging. And the films that they've been watching are quite challenging in a sense as well, because they're part of obviously the Lux Prize, which is all, yeah, about issues pertaining to sort of Europe today. So the 4 main questions that we've been examining are: what is the importance generally of introducing young people of this age group to European cinema, full stop? The second one is, how do people reduce that sort of fear, which is certainly a UK thing, of some
subtitles.
People, usually teachers, I have to say, of the fear of the subtitle, and to make it accessible. And whether and how they approach that. Is it so the third point is, how do they do it? Is it, do you carefully select genres that fit in with what they know? Or do you engage them into that? And then the last thing, how is it possible, on the basis of watching these films, to get European cinema as, if you like, a starting point for discussing more wider issues? And I think the films that are chosen have been really ideal for that. So looking at identity, immigration, definitely, that kind of thing. So it's not about film, but it's using film, definitely.
Yeah. That's exactly. I think that's probably the most kind of like encompassing way to actually to define the journey so far. But that's, I'm gonna also, like, you know, we're talking about, of course, this is a UK national program, and I'm gonna start probably also from the second point as well, because it's something that I constantly highlighted all throughout, not only actually UK schools, but also European, especially Northern European schools, the subtitle issue, which is something that is still, is the very first sort of barrier that we need to kind of, you know, take down. And it's, for you, you think it's just a matter of quantity? So actually, the sort of exposure to subtitles, or is just about also, as you said, like linked to the third point, which is the selection of genres. It's just more about also trying to pinpoint at the beginning something that is really pleasing and very easy to watch for young audiences.
Yeah, that's right. I think the first thing is, if you could show someone a classic foreign film, like a Jacques Tati film,
yeah,
and they would get that, because there's no dialogue.
Exactly.
So the understanding of what's going on is irrelevant to the country it's from. It's just actually, the more dialogue there is in any particular film, people have to almost double their concentration initially. You know, so I think the students have been intrigued by the process. So first of all, their first experience, perhaps at all, of watching a subtitle film is a very weird and kind of different culture to them. So it is challenging. More than one experience of that, so watching the second film, the subtitles didn't really seem to feature heavily why they found that harder to concentrate, perhaps. So as the film went on, even with the first film, they were forgetting that the subtitles were there. And I think the teachers were very impressed with that, because for them, they're kind of used to that personally. And they were concerned that the students wouldn't necessarily like that. But actually, they found that, particularly with Illegal, it was a very solid film, they were saying. You know, there's obviously, they found the film itself, they connected to it on a very emotional level. And so as the emotions changed and character development went on, they could understand it. And so the language really, really wasn't, I don't think that was an issue at all, really. Yeah. In terms of the choosing the right genre, they're hard films to watch so far. And in both cases, the students are hoping that the second one was going to be, and I know they're also hoping that the third one was going to be, so they may be disappointed. They were hoping for a comedy, because they wanted to experience different genres. So obviously, in the first film, there's no happy ending. Sorry to ruin that for anybody who hasn't seen it, but it's so that sort of denouement that they were getting is not, it's not even resolved. So this unresolved nature, and they're not used to that. They're used to the very sort of standard Todorov structural sort of three acts narrative. That's what they're used to. So for them, it wasn't as emotionally satisfying as they had been used to. So other elements in the film, the idea that the people in the film are kind of working with mafia and there's trauma involved, and actually there's some humor in the film as well, little bits, I mean, that they could connect to it on little bits that they've been used to. I think what they're used to, obviously, is Hollywood cinema, which equals some sort of conclusive element there. So ideally, what the teachers have been doing, and I've done a little bit of that with them, is talking about what these genres are, what they're meant to be for. So it's about learning about other cultures and who we are and identity, and that makes it emotionally interesting for them. So they're looking out for that, even though they didn't know what the film was actually about, obviously. But it's the way they interpret it. So having a genre which is a nice genre in their comfort zone, I think would have made a better watching experience for them.
Exactly, and I'm going to link it to what you said earlier, because I think it's very pivotal in a way in order to enhance this sort of approach to film literacy for the students, is the fact of abandoning the concept of conservative narrative, because there's a sort of the constant urge from the one that I kind of gathered from the young audiences to always want to have that moment that actually breaks the narrative, the crisis, and then the resolution of that crisis. And sometimes, you know, especially in European films and contemporary as well, it doesn't happen. It's just a moment of an absence of narrative or real life. In a way, I think probably for the teachers, the challenge is to kind of manage to bring the students beyond that point of just liking or not liking, or rather entertained or not entertained. Because if you manage to go beyond that point, then automatically we go towards the fourth point, which was the idea of learning through the films. So learning about main issues through the films. But I really wonder how, you know, if it's that, to what extent is like, it's difficult to actually manage to bring the students to a new level of attention rather than just pleasure.
Well, I think after the first one, I talked to the teachers and we came up with an idea that I think has worked, actually. It's the concept of time for reflection.
Mm-hmm.
After the first film, they were asked pretty quickly, you know, almost immediately, in fact, within the hour, what they thought about the film. Then they had to process it all in their head, which was kind of hard for them to do. So, and they actually said afterwards, we'd really like some time to consider this. So the second film, Plato's Academy, they were given some time to reflect, which meant that they could get to grips with how they felt about the film. There was a little breathing space for them to sort of consider the issues and themes in the film. So it wasn't just simply, did you enjoy it, did you not enjoy it? Were you able to relate to the ending or the structure or, you know, the sort of formulaic sort of nature of the films, or at least in the context of relationship between films that they'd been used to, like the Hollywood narrative, as you say. So it was more about the actual context of the points within the film. So the teachers really loved this process because it gave the students time to say, okay, we were going to examine some of the stereotypes relating to the Chinese community, for example. How did certain elements that they could easily relate to, like football, for example, it's a very working class game traditionally, provides kind of togetherness in people. And those representations meant that the students were kind of examining issues. So they weren't learning about film structure directly.
Mm-hmm.
They were using film as a tool to examine other things. So, for example, in the second film, it's set in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Now, their first thing they thought of was that this was not the Greece that they were used to seeing at all.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't the postcard holiday version with beaches and everyone happy.
Mm-hmm.
This was not the tourism version. So the people were living in poverty. There was tension between different cultures. And I think they understood that a lot better for not having to consider the structure of the film necessarily. And also it meant that, for example, in the first film, there's a young person in the film as the main protagonist. In the second film, it's more appealing when there is someone, you know, of their own age,
yeah,
you know, for example. And they didn't get the humour in the second film either. So irony, I think, was kind of lost on them. But certain elements of it, like looking at the Greek community and how patriotic they were and how their own reflections to multicultural society were sort of promoting that as a good thing. And yet, unfortunately, the other end of the coin, the way they treated Albanians, for example,
yeah, very, true.
Very, very poor. So the students could really get to grips with that. And I really liked hearing, I think, more from the second film. Even though they didn't like the film, they actually appreciated the representation. So they were given just, I think it's just going back to what I said before, it's that breathing space. So it's not a glamorous film. In a way, it's that dull everyday life. I mean, it's boring in some ways, but actually that boredom, as the students described it as, allowed them to see between the lines a little bit to bring out what I think was the flavor of the film.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, it brings us back to the idea also of the classic film critics. They always say that it's much easier to review a film that they didn't like rather than the film that actually they liked a lot. The fact of actually facing themselves with films that they would never probably watch willingly, especially at this age, but it brings all this new sort of layers into the discussion. So, and even if they don't really bloom now, having watched Academia Platonos, as we said earlier, the Greek film, and all the, you know, the concept of identity and immigration, those things probably will come after when they would watch another film with similar tropes, but, you know, and they will create a new kind of a new relationships between the themes. So that's probably one of the most interesting things that I've stumbled upon with this project so far, is the fact of the non-likingness of the films actually brings very interesting traits into the table discussion.
I think so. I mean, certainly Plato's Academy, if you boil it all down to a sentence, it's sort of around what happens to a man when actually that man discovers he has always been what he actually hates the most, you know, yeah. Romans, you know. And so it's a kind of irony. Now, watching that, the teachers said that they thought that was really funny. And when the students were watching the teachers laughing, they were wondering what the hell they were laughing at, because there was no slapstick, there was no obvious humor that they were used to. So the adults found it very entertaining, but the students found it fascinating mm-hmm. and educational. They didn't enjoy it on an entertaining or kind of, you know, the genre didn't really work for them. But actually, there were certain things which looked at satire that is obvious to get. You're looking at the darker traits, if you like, of multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. And that's a universal story. That could be from anywhere. And I think irrelevant of the subtitles and irrelevant of the, the fact that it obviously was a very personal story to one person, but actually it could be anybody can understand it. Had the kids been laughing all the way through, if it was a comedy or they, mm-hmm. you know, it'd been another genre, maybe they wouldn't, I think you're right, maybe they wouldn't have quite got to grips because they're pulling out things. Mm-hmm. You know, there's an element of bittersweet about that film for me. It was dramedy and there was drama and comedy. Yeah. But for the students, I don't think it worked on that level them. No, and I think Illegal it was kind of the same kind of thing. You know, they got a lot of things from it. It's like that child as witness in mm-hmm. that film. It's very much looking at through people whose eyes are you sort of seeing it through. And obviously they, for media studies, they've been examining representations of identity, and that film certainly looks at identification and crossing borders and that kind of thing. So there are things they'll be aware of, but they found that quite hard going. That was there's a lot of mental and physical abuse in the film, a lot of injustice, and a couple of the kids found it very moving, actually. But again, they enjoyed that concept of understanding and getting to grips with the issues. So I think what you said is absolutely right. It's it made them think a lot more, which I guess is what the project's all about,
really. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. As you said, you know, hopefully that's what the project is all about. But, you know, like Fred School is definitely not a pioneer about it. There's been a lot of work in the UK for a long time for the people like you and Lindsay or Nyans, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're both part of a group called the Movies Group, which involve educational practitioners working independently and also education officers at cinemas, for mm-hmm. example, who have been trying to work with world cinema generally, but specifically with European film for many, many years now, and trying to introduce young people, partly by showing film as a concept of an art form, so looking mm-hmm. at, for example, French New Wave or Italian Neorealism, that kind of thing. But so it's looking at the form and structure yeah. of the film, but also using film as a teaching tool relating to issues, as exactly the Lux films that Fred at School Project is examining. And I think that's been really, really the good thing about this film, because often people are looking at French, German, Italian films that are regarded as classics
yeah.
and have been on the curriculum for years and years and years. What this project is doing, I think, is really good, because it's looking at co-productions across mm-hmm. Europe and really kind of hard-hitting films. And I think Lindsay and I would probably both say the same thing, is that, you know, we're really pleased to be part of this, because it's starting to get young people to, I think, attain a kind of confidence to discuss mm-hmm. the films, not just internally, but have that kind of relationship between people around their own country and with other countries to yeah. get a kind of, to cross-reference that experience. So I'd be fascinated to know what Lindsay thinks about that.
Indeed, Lindsay Onions will join us here on Fred Film Radio just after a short break.
Fred at School Show.
Fred Film Radio, we're back for Fred at School, and in fact, as Nick anticipated, we have here Lindsay Onions, film curator and cross-arts producer for Barbican. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you.
So, as we were saying, we were talking about film literacy. Now, of course, we have you here, and I really want to hear your experience and your journey, especially with Nick's interaction. So, you guys, please take it away and say whatever you like.
Okay.
Hello, Lindsay. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Nick.
What was talking about earlier was the concept of how important it was for young people to be exposed to European films. What I was going to ask you was how early you think people should be exposed to European cinema to sort of get a flavour for it, so that later on it's not some sort of big expose or fear for them.
I think the earlier the better, basically. in general, getting children used to different forms of moving image and breaking down the barriers of the idea that there might be different types or types that I watch or types that are about me and these other types that I'm taught about would be the best way forward. Obviously, there's some research about screen time and very small children. But I think once you're ready to start introduce children to moving image, just introduce everything. Children don't have concepts of languages. They're used to not understanding lots of words. They're used to decoding things. So they'll be quite happy to watch things when they're young.
Yeah, that's been my experience too. It's strange how very young children of about sort of 8 or 9, when they start to watch subtitle films, there's sort of, how strange is this? This is very odd. We're not used to this. Unless they're introduced to, as you say, other forms of visual literacy and moving image earlier than that. But as soon as they are, that fear, and it's not even fear, I think, sometimes it's the fear from the teachers, but that slightly strangeness disappears very quickly, don't you find?
Absolutely. I think it's us as adults, whether parents or teachers or people in organisations, institutions, can have a fear of how children will react. But children are naturally curious, they're naturally open to things when they're young. And so actually, they'll take something, if you put it in front of them and they enjoy it and it holds their attention, they'll be fine with it. And I think it's about us not thinking that European film is this other thing that's different from what we watch, that's removed from our everyday life or our everyday values and experience, that actually it's just another form of cinema and another form of representing and telling stories.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's strange because sometimes the barrier or it's the perceived barrier of subtitles, and not just European film but world cinema, people forget that actually other types of genres are also potentially a little bit sort of controversial for young people, like, you know, avant-garde or experimental documentary, you know, things like that. So it's not just the fact that subtitles, it's anything that's outside of their range of viewing, which is quite narrow, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think we also need to remember how much a film is not about the spoken language within it, but is about how you, the music that affects you, what you, the images you see on screen, you know, the whole atmosphere, the colour, the art direction, everything that's happening in a film makes up our understanding of it. And language is only a part of that. And there are ways around language. If a film is very heavily dialogue based, there are people who read out subtitles, or sometimes parents whisper the relevant points to help their children understand a film. You know, you can work with different things like that if there's real concerns. But generally, children will watch and we'll take in what they can, and then there's time for discussion around things. And if you want to introduce, and you are concerned, and you want to introduce foreign language films without subtitles, short films can be a very good way to start, just to build up that exposure and get children used to thinking and viewing in different ways.
I think that's really true. I mean, I was mentioning before about Jacques Tati, which is obviously not a short filmmaker, but it's mostly silent. And so the idea that it is foreign and doesn't have a particularly different narrative necessarily, but it's very universal, completely universal. Whilst it's important that the students are looking at narrative and film structure and sort of examining it as a film, I think the idea that these films, particularly the Lux films, which have a very strong issue-based sensibility, they essentially look at things like immigration, asylum, identity particularly. Film can be used not just as a tool to teach about film, but obviously about other areas of the curriculum as well.
Absolutely. I think a lot of the issue-based films are incredibly powerful. They've been some of the most popular we've ever shown. Films that deal sensitively and in a way that young people can relate to, children and young people can relate to, because the protagonist is of a similar or slightly older age than them. Some of those films have been so powerful and successful. Films that have dealt with bullying, like you say, immigration, differences, war experiences in different parts of the world. They both help all kinds of children living in this country to relate to their own experiences or parents' experiences or experiences of their friends. A lot of the issues are universal. And if not, they help us to understand the world. So there's two ways. It's either to look at issues that are universal, such as bullying, immigration and so on, or it's to look at things going on in the world. It's a real window on the world film. It can take us to the other side of the world, places we'll never get to see or get to go to. And we can relate to people in completely different countries and different situations. And both of those are really, really powerful ways of using film. And the discussions that happen afterwards are so interesting. What young people and children have to say when they've watched a powerful issue-based film, it's fantastic how it can bring things out and bring children and young people together as well.
I think that's exactly right. It's strange you use the word windows in the world, because I think that's very, very apt. In the first two films, Illegal and Plato's Academy, they're watching representations of countries, particularly in Plato's Academy, because the people were saying that it's set in Greece, and their thoughts on Greece were almost like a tourist version of what the country was like. It's all very sunny, and so the palette was very rich. This film doesn't adopt that at all, so it's really challenging what they know, their representations of an identity, if you like, which is really fantastic. Actually, the students didn't like the film, but interestingly enough, afterwards they had a little bit of time to reflect, and then, as you say, once that discussion kicked in, they were able to really kind of start to examine. So sometimes, perhaps, actually not enjoying a film, conversely, can be quite an interesting catalyst for understanding it, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's okay to not like things. Part of the exposure to a wider range of cultural media and cultural product is it means we're not going to like everything, and that's okay. And that does, like you say, spark interesting discussion. Some people will like it, some people won't like it. Discussing what you didn't like and then having a discussion that might lead into interesting topics for a class is incredibly rewarding. I think it's better to be exposed to more, to be presented with more ideas and be able to articulate why you don't like things, or discuss with your friends what you didn't like, have a debate and a conversation and move on perhaps to wider issues in society, is just as rewarding as liking everything.
Yeah, I quite agree. I was going to ask you one thing about how the Barbican sort of show films in terms of European cinema. Do you particularly try and go for kind of certain genres that work, or you kind of do you experiment with showing many different types of films from as wide a range of countries as is possible?
We don't really go for genres. I know that I think it can be a helpful hook, particularly for teenagers who might be used to thinking in terms of genre. I think younger primary certainly don't think like that. It's probably as you're going through older primary and into secondary, you can start thinking a lot more about genres. But we don't actually, we really just go for a good film. And if it's a good film with a good story that holds attention, it doesn't really matter where it's from. People will want to see it, people will enjoy it, and people will talk about it. Obviously, animation is a good medium for younger children. It's very accessible for them, and obviously it's a very good way of breaking down the barriers with international film, because you don't really notice where an animation is from, particularly if they're not dialogue heavy. But other than that, I would say we don't really try and focus on a genre. We just focus on a really, really good film that we will think will appeal and hold attention and create interesting discussion. We do sometimes partner with different countries, particularly through their film institutes or cultural institutes, to showcase films from certain areas. In our last Framed Film Festival, we focused on Nordic countries, and that was very, very powerful to bring some different ranges of film and give together to bring an idea of what that country might be like to a British audience. But otherwise, we try and get a really good range of films.
These two films, to a certain degree, have young people within the film themselves. So there's a protagonist that perhaps children can relate to, this kind of option of child as witness, viewing things through their eyes. I just wondered how important you thought that was for young people to have that connection.
I think in our experience, It does help when you can relate to someone in the story, even though they might be in a very different part of the world to you or going through an experience you've never been through. It brings it much closer to home. You can imagine yourself in that situation. And I think that while children can enjoy watching films without protagonists of a similar age, it's a very, very good way in to world cinema and European cinema. It definitely creates a much, much more immediate link.
Yeah, I quite agree. Now, these films, as I said, mentioned that they're part of the Lux Prize, which obviously casts some sort of spotlight on films that are really at the heart of the European public debate. So for the students to have that debate, or at least be able to have the platform to discuss it with each other, is really good. What the Fred at School has done is also given the opportunity to, I think, slightly empower them by having the confidence to talk on radio, which is not as easy for some as it is to others. But the last thing I was going to ask is how important it is for them to translate their thoughts and relate them to people from other countries, because obviously this is a pan-European project. So they're hearing about other people from the same age group about their opinions from France, from Italy, you know, Iceland, etc. So all over Europe, really.
Yeah, I think it's a very exciting project. And as you've touched on there, aside from being exposed to more different types of film, to be able to discuss film amongst yourselves and with your class, it's also the other experiences that people are getting to talk on radio to build confidence. And then as well as being brought closer to their peers across Europe through watching cinemas from those countries, they're also being brought closer together by understanding that other people have similar reactions to the films to them, or perhaps differing ones, but then they learn what that says about our different cultural identities. And I think that to understand everything that Europe does offer us, and that we are part of Europe, for British children particularly, is very important to understand countries that are just part of Europe and just very close and very accessible to us. It's a really important thing for British children who, because we speak English, also have a lot of access to other films from English speaking countries, and particularly the States, obviously. So it's we understand the States quite well, we understand America quite well, and to understand our closer neighbours quite well is very important for us.
I quite agree. I think it's strange sometimes, because we look at what it is to be British and we look at identity as a British person, but also it's much more important, I think, also to look at ourselves as European or world citizens, and just how we relate our own cultures and look at the similarities and differences to get more understanding. Because obviously in these films, there's injustice at the very heart of them. They can be quite bittersweet. There's elements of comedy in them, but there's elements of drama. But of course, in film, you get that. And I think that rich kind of vein of understanding that the students seem to be getting here is really invaluable.
No, I'm sure it must be. I mean, it's an incredibly exciting project. I think also we have an idea of what modern Britain is here, and we are young people have lots of films and TV and media that can talk about what modern Britain is. They know from going to their schools that it's, you know, we've got people from all over the world and with different cultural heritages living here, and we all live together. And I think it's also useful for our young people to understand that that is also the same in lots of other European countries. So there are other issues for people that come up, that there isn't just one cultural identity in any part of Europe as well. Each European country has its own complex identity, which is constantly changing. And I think that's a really helpful thing for our young people to learn too.
Obviously, we've been discussing this within an educational context, but I think I wonder if it's also part of the wider audience development as well. Obviously, there's a very small percentage of people who actually watch world cinema generally. So having more young people watching these films, having a really rich understanding of different cultures, will elicit some lifetime engagement with world cinema, hopefully.
I mean, that would be the hope, definitely, because we know how much we enjoy world cinema once we've been exposed to it and we've discovered it ourselves. So obviously we want to share that. But as we've already touched on, it is about cultural understanding and tolerance of other nations and tolerance of difference, and understanding actually how strong our similarities are as human beings. That's very important. And with most things, the earlier you start, the more you feel comfortable with something, and the more you feel you have the right to something and it's part of your life and part of your way of approaching the world. So the fact that you would regularly feel that you can access European cinema, it's hopefully, like you say, something you can carry through with you.
Well, I have to say thanks very much, Lindsay. It's been great talking to you again. I have to say, all over the years that I've been working in cine literacy and for film education and beyond, I think the work that the Barbican does really fits in superbly with the current thing that we're doing with Fred at School. It's this empowerment and engagement with young people to try and encourage them to watch more European films. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you to both of you, actually. That was a beautiful and insightful conversation. I really enjoyed being the live audience. And hopefully... Fred's school is going towards the right path that you already, with your studies and research, are doing for a long time. And I thank you again, and, you know, hopefully I'll see you again with that hope fulfilled about world cinema and world film literacy. For the time being, we stick to European cinema and European film literacy, and always here on Fred Film Radio.
Fred at School Show.
So, Fred Film Radio, we're back. We're back always for Fred at School. We need to wrap up. It is time. We had a beautiful, insightful conversation, first with Nick Walker and then joined by Lindsay O'Nions. Of course, the little and invaluable introduction by Eddie Bertozzi, representative for the International Critics Week in Venice. And yes, the big protagonist was It Sleep Die, but more so was the analysis of the themes that we can see and track down all throughout these three first episodes here at Fred at School. So we started with Illegal, then we went to Plato's Academy, and now it's It Sleep Die. And the children, I shouldn't actually call them children, because they're students, and they're really developing a wonderful way to see films and digest film literacy. The students are seeing the sort of journey that the Lux Prize shortlists are taking them along, and the main themes are immigration and the worry and the angst of unemployment, and also much more broadly, but still always present in the films that we selected so far, is the concept of identity. So what does it mean to be part of something or not being part of something, or be part of a country or not another country? And I think that it's really developing also an idea of like self-awareness. So I am from, say, UK, I am from Iceland, I'm from Italy, but what does it mean? How can I relate to my fellow European students? And I think Fred Schools, actually, as we heard already from experiences of Lindsay and Nick in film literacy and how to involve young students in film and engaging with film, and I think Fred School is doing the right job, is following the right path, and I'm really glad to hear that from the real experts. This journey, however, is, you know, far from being over. We still have one beautiful UK show coming along for the fourth film, but for now I really want to thank the people that are helping this journey to actually come into place and developing episode by episode. And these people are the University of Barcelona, University of Roehampton, and Babes Bollai, Ayace Torino, of course, Les Amis du Cinéma de Réel, Tofra Lampin, Iceland, Festival de Cannes, C-A-N-S, HRT, Subti, My Movies, Venice Days, Claudia Tomasini and Associates, Subti Access, and of course, our sponsors, Regione Autonoma della Sardegna and Sardegna Film Commission, and ourselves, I have to thank ourselves, of course, Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.